From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
It's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. And we're pleased and honored to have Jerry Lean join us from the Parochial Athletic League.
Correct.
Is that the police athletic league in some cities?
It is, yes, yeah. Very much so. So we get confused
almost
that way.
Police,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, I grew up in San Francisco, and it was CYO.
CYO. Oh, I grew up with CYO. Yeah.
Right. And so
basketball and pizza.
Yeah, exactly. So when I came up here and I got involved with our Catholic schools, it was the Parochial Athletic League, which took a little while to get used to. But it's been a great establishment, and it's been in existence for quite a while since I've been there and involved for 34 years. And it was probably another 30 before that that it had been running and up and running. And we've expanded it some, but it's really quite an experience. So
yeah. PAL with perfect acronym. Huh?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Absolutely.
So you have both a boys PAL and a girls PAL.
Right.
You go down how far? You go into fourth grade, third grade?
Well, we have a little dribblers program, which covers first through fourth grade. So that's a specific season of basketball. So typically November through February.
I have a granddaughter who's two, and she's a little dribbler. She dribbles her food from her mouth down to her bib.
I don't think that was the meaning of it, but that's pretty close to it. And then we have the PAL, the boys and girls division, is usually from fifth through eighth grade.
Uh-huh.
It seems to work really well. Jill Bennett is my counterpart. She's been the girls director for over 20 years.
We had Jill on last week or two weeks ago. Yeah,
and so I've been doing this, as I mentioned before, I've been involved with the PAL for 34 years, but as director for 30 years. And Jim Adams was the gentleman that brought me on board at that particular point. And it's been a great experience. We just got done with the track championships yesterday. And, we had 27 schools participating in that. So the numbers of boys and girls is astronomical that over the course of the year are influenced by these. And it's been fantastic. I really have enjoyed the time.
Yeah, I remember years ago, my oldest daughter, Erin, was going to St. James along with my son, Ted. And I think it was fifth grade maybe, and they wanted to have a basketball team. And all the schools were in Sacramento pretty much.
Right.
And St. James didn't have a gym at that point. This was years ago. And they only had the outdoors. So every game was an away game.
Yes.
Because, you know. And so they didn't have anybody to coach. And I used to be a sports writer. And I knew basketball.
Hey, yeah,
I didn't know
let's
how
get
to
you to
play
do it, right?
basketball or coach it. But they said, oh, what would you do it? You
right.
know. And so I said, okay. So, you know, I started coaching him out there on the blacktop with the chain basket.
Yes.
You know, it makes a different. It doesn't swish.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It goes ka-chunk, you know. And none of the girls had played basketball before, and I had never coached before. And we'd show up at a gym at the various Catholic schools around.
Sure.
And we were losing, 42. It was like the Bad News Bears. We were 42-4.
Wow, yeah.
Scores like that,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
But the whole it was interesting to see how excited they get when somebody would score.
Right.
And, we only lost by 30 this game. You
yes.
know, it was minor goals. And,
right.
and I remember once one team came out, they were doing their layup drills before the game.
Right hand, left hand,
left hand,
reverse
right-hand,
layups, yes.
Pass behind the back, dribbling between the legs. And I called our girls over and I said, forget our drill, just watch them.
You could learn something from them,
you
right?
You learn something. But it was just a great experience.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what the students feel when they go through this. I've seen it grow and expand over the course of years. I started at St. James, as a matter of fact, and coached on the outdoor hoops and enjoyed it tremendously. And it's not whether you have a gym or not. It's really about the kids having a chance to be able to play.
Exactly.
And enjoy themselves. And I think the camaraderie that they feel, too, even when they're being sometimes beaten that badly, they get to meet children from other schools,
absolutely.
Other students, and it's a great community experience for them. And I have really enjoyed that aspect. It's grown and changed a lot in those early years. We used to pull you know, parents out of the stands to help officiate the games.
Sure.
Now we have an officials organization, Hawkins, that does that for us.
And oh, good.
They're great. They go through all the normal processes we expect of a Catholic school employee to go through. Our coaches go through a training process. It's a program that we selected from Notre Dame called Play Like a Champion Today.
Oh, yeah.
The old saying
right there on the wall.
Yeah, yeah, right there.
Football players all hit it.
I love that. Yeah, we get to go back. Jill and I go back just about every year to the conference and are retrained and evaluate the program.
Now, but, who runs it back there at Notre Dame?
It's out of, the gentleman's name is escaping my Kristen is the gal that I work with right now, but they host a conference, and then when we go back there, and their premise is the coach as minister. So we, Jill and I specifically chose that program because of that component. And the challenges that we face in youth sports right now, it's overly competitive at times. It's you almost have to choose one sport and specify early, which
the specialization has gotten crazy.
It's and
that used to be football was
one season,
and then basketball, then baseball, and then and then soccer kind of worked around. Soccer became huge. It wasn't huge when I was growing up, but and then all the other, you know, tennis, water polo, swimming, golf. All of them, you know, a lot of in the summer camps and all that. There's this specialization.
There is, and it's a challenge because as I grew up, I always thought that playing various sports helped me get better in general.
Yeah.
And then as I got into high school and started to realize I was probably a little bit better at one than another, it still had that effect of training me in various ways. So I kind of wish that we could go back to that, but it's hard because a lot of parents look at it as their opportunity for their children to maybe get a college scholarship or whatever, even though the numbers don't support
that. The numbers don't add up.
No, they don't. And I still think that our training that we do with the coaches helps us with the specific intent of developing the young boys and girls to have an experience that's hopefully positive,
right?
That they're gaining some physical awareness, but more importantly, just that community aspect.
Yeah.
As I said yesterday, we had our track championship and probably over 2,000 people there, you know, parents and fans and grandmas and grandpas and the students and everyone. It was a really special bond that everybody has. They're competing, but the sportsmanship, you know, when you're done and they're all shaking hands with each other or patting each other on the back, that's the reward. It's not the medals or the ribbons or the trophies. Yeah. It's that kind of connection that they develop with each other.
Well, and, you know, the other thing is sports has become so big on television.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes the role modeling is not very good. You know, it's kind of... We're kind of always had sore losers, but now we have sore winners. You know
exactly.
Guy just you know won an Olympic gold medal or something, and they put the microphone in his face, and he's going, "This is for all the people that didn't believe in me." And you go, "Whoa, wait a minute,
Why
don't you just thank the Lord and be happy?"
Where's the graciousness?
Yeah,
you know, where is that appreciative?
Yeah.
Of not only your abilities and skills, but the training and the coaching and the development, the support of your family, et cetera, to get to that particular level. It is a challenge. You know, I think our program is a little countercultural because we don't want – I mean, we do have competitive nature of the program, but we try not to sell our souls to that.
Yeah.
We really still want the students to have an opportunity to participate and play and enjoy themselves.
Yeah, there's kind of the two extremes. I mean, there's always that scoreboard, you know, you know, we've all got egos, and as long as we're keeping score, we're trying to win.
Right.
And then you have the kind of the the ones that they make fun of. You know,
the bad news bears are you talking about?
Yeah. You know, we don't care who scored the goal, you clap. We don't care if it was the other team or, you know, and everybody gets a trophy at the end of the year. And, and there's kind of the two extremes. And there's you know, you have to recognize, I mean, my son just finished playing Little League, and he and now he's umpiring, and he's finding the difference. You know?
Absolutely,
And but he wanted to win. He didn't want to strike out.
Right.
And you know, but he never got down about it. And it was always up to us as parents. And fortunately, he had really good coaches. The horror stories that you hear about youth baseball we never experienced.
Right.
But that's important. I remember when, like you, played all the sports growing up, and my dad said, "You just remember one thing when you're out there, and that guy on the other side, whether it's the other side of the line of scrimmage or the pitching or tennis on the other side of the net, he wants to win as badly as you do.
Sure,
and he's got the same hopes and dreams that you do, and you respect him.
Right,
not just respect his ability." But respect him as a human being.
Absolutely,
you know, because you're in this thing together,
right?
You know, and if you win by cheating or by being a jerk, or you're not winning anything,
right? And there's always going to be a time when you have to face up to what you've done, in life. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. I like the balance we try to strike in the PAL, because we do have a competitive nature, but we don't. We don't see that as the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
The goal for us is to be able to provide the opportunity for the young men and women to learn how to play with each other, play against an opponent in a respectful manner.
Right.
And I think our coaches have become more ingrained. I look at myself. I was not a good coach, you know, early on. I was probably the antithesis of what we want.
Mm-hmm.
It took time for me to realize, to mature, to understand that as a role model, I could not do the things that I was doing. I needed to change. And I think the PAL helped me with that tremendously because as a leader, I had to say, well, I can't do that. I can't yell at the officials. I'm setting an example for, you know, 10 to 14-year-old children, and they don't need that.
That's right.
They need to see someone who cares about them, is trying to instruct, and works with an official to hopefully give them a chance to play. It's not about me. Yeah. I'm not the coach. Isn't the one that's going to win. It's the children are going to win. The students are going to win. They're the ones that play, and by playing, they win.
Yeah, and you know and I know at the PAL you're dealing with Catholic schools that are playing other Catholic schools, but you're wearing that Jesuit shirt there, and Jesuit Saint Francis, the Christian Brothers,
Cristo Rey. We're all in this together.
When they're playing in Mercy up in Redding, Red Bluff, when they're playing, they're frequently playing not against Catholic schools, and I know from attending those games. That people are watching them. Oh, this is a Catholic school.
Yes.
This is a Catholic school.
Yeah.
You don't all
There's
often
a standard
punch
there, yes.
There's
you're
a standard
right. yes.
there. And my dad used to tell me that. I went to public school in Davis. We didn't have a Catholic school at the time.
Right.
And my dad said, back when you couldn't eat meat on Friday.
Right.
And he says, your friends, you're going to be going to the football game with your friends on Friday night. They're looking to see if you're eating a hot dog.
Right. Yeah.
They're eating a hot dog.
Yeah,
they don't
yeah.
see any problem. They don't even understand why you're not. But they're checking you out because they know you're Catholic.
Right.
You know, so.
And there's a certain standard that we all have to face up to. And I know. And I think that was when I look back at the years that I've been involved with, you know, from elementary school, growing up in San Francisco, CYO, all the way through. At this particular point, you know, towards the end of my career, I've looked at that as kind of the guiding light for me and my faith.
Yeah.
So the athletics and my faith and my education all have brought me to this point. And it is a standard that we hold dear because that's who we are. And I think it really helps our children, too, to see that kind of standard, to maintain it, and to want to expand on it over the course of a lifetime. And I feel blessed to have been involved with youth sports for so long. And Jill and I have had a great relationship as directors. Even though, I don't say even though, as she is at Christian Brothers and I'm at Jesuit, what we find is that there's just a unique bond that is the Catholic faith.
And yeah, indeed.
It's been expanded upon by the Play Like a Champion Today program. It just gives our coaches a way of winning and a way of coaching that's not only about the scoreboard, but about what we can accomplish with the children that are.
Yeah, I remember one time interviewing, I think it was called the Positive Coaching Alliance.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was our program before.
Yeah, it seems like they are similar in.
Absolutely.
That's not a Catholic organization.
Right.
But a former coaches, things like that.
Mm-hmm. We actually had used the PCA for a long time, and we loved that association. We respect them tremendously. When Jill and I looked at the Play Like a Champion Today program, we felt that there was a specific Catholic component that we thought was valuable to us as a program, and not that the PCA wasn't.
Right.
It was just there was an additional component with it that just helps us, I think, in terms of trying to maintain that component of our program, and it's worked out really well. We just love having the Play Like a Champion Today and PCA, and I still communicate with PCA directors. I have a couple good friends on the board here in the region, and it's not that we don't like them. It's just that we have chosen a kind of a slightly different road to go, and it's worked out very well for us.
So, how long do you go back to Notre Dame for?
We have a conference. It's a two-day conference, beginning of the summer, so it's like mid-June that we go back. They provide a youth component, a high school component, and it's been really very helpful for us. And there are many dioceses across the nation that participate in this. And when we found it, we thought, well, we should go take a look. You know, we should be cautious. We don't want to just jump in, without knowing. So Jill and I had gone back and observed the first conference, said, oh, man, this is exactly what we're looking for. And so we've been now with them for 5 years, officially 4 years. And so each of the coaches that go through our program through the PAL have to take a coach's training program. And it could be the Play Like a Champion Today program or there's a national high school coaches certification. And we didn't feel like we needed to go that high, but a number of them do. And so the Play Like a Champion is a renewable every 4 years. We have a changeover. So Jill, myself, Dave Parsh, who's the little dribbler coordinator. We go back, and Dave was involved as a presenter for PCA for a number of years. And so we train on the program, and we make our presentations to the coaches during the course of the school year. And then they're certified, and then we keep track of who's certified. And that's a requirement. It's just as important as the medical insurance forms that we have for each of the students and the first aid kits. And we have a little checklist that we have to go through to make sure that all of our coaches are prepared and can take care of the young people that they're coaching. So.
I one time was back at Notre Dame to doing a radio show the day before a football game and then covering a football, doing sort of color on a football game. I went out to the grotto. I was almost late to the game because I went out to the grotto.
Isn't that amazing?
I didn't want to leave the grotto.
Yeah, right.
You know? It's like, I just talked to the Blessed Mother. Can I leave for 3 hours and go see the game? You know, it's like.
As a Catholic person growing up, as a young man, it was a dream to go back there. Yeah. And, of course, being able to go back, Jill's the same way, and Dave's the same way. We just, it's just like a mecca for us to go back there and to be able to then take what we learned there and bring it back and share it with our program here in Sacramento has just been fantastic.
I remember growing up, We didn't have Catholic school, a little town, and we had catechism class on Saturday morning from 9 to 11. And the Notre Dame game would come on about 10 in the morning.
Yeah, I said, oh, no.
You sneak that little transistor radio into catechism class.
Yeah, sister was asking, why is that?
Yeah. Right, yeah. Of course, father would ask what the score was.
Right, right.
Because they were all from Ireland, all in France.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah, that's for sure.
So, yeah. So. How many sports does the PAL cover?
So we have the three seasons. So we do fall, winter, and spring. So in the fall, we have boys flag football, girls volleyball, and then we run a co-ed cross-country program. And then we get into the winter, we have basketball, so boys, girls, and little dribbler. And then the springtime, the girls have girls flag football. Boys have the boys volleyball program, and then we have the two co-ed sports, which is track and field and golf. And golf is going to be competed next Monday out at Hagen Oaks in the Arcade Creek.
Okay.
The two nines. We have 230 golfers. I'm trying to put the tee times together.
That's
it's
amazing.
Like amazing.
They play nine holes?
They play nine holes. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. It's been great. It started an athletic director, Barbara Marsley from out at Holy Family. And Frank Mooney, who for years was involved at Christian Brothers and Jesuit and St. Patrick's, they got together and put this golf program. And so we actually have a perpetual trophy that's the Mooney Marsley Trophy. And so we give that out now. And it's been going on for about, gosh, almost 15 years now, I think. Time flies.
Boy, how many events can you offer in a dual meet in track and field?
So,
do you have dual meets, or do you bring all?
We bring everybody together.
Yeah,
We have the one facility at Jesuit that works really well. Yeah. It's great now that it's all weather. It used to be the dirt track that we had out there. So, but we have 100, 200, 60 hurdles, 200 hurdles, and I'm going to be criticized by my friend who runs it because I'm not specific about these things. 400, 800 mile. We do shot put, high jump, long jump.
Wow.
That's everything right there. So, Yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff.
I loved growing up going to track and field meets, you know, and whether it was high school or college. But and my dad said, why don't you try one of those? And I go, well, I'm naturally slow. I can't jump. I couldn't find of all. There's so many events.
Right, right, exactly.
You'd figure, you know. I mean,
there's got to be something, right?
Yeah, you know, the weights are. You know,
right, sure.
Kids tend to be bigger and stronger, and the pole vaulters or the high jumpers are leaner and they're frequently taller. And then there's of course the sprinters and the long distance. Every body type seemed to be a little bit different.
Sure,
and yet. I said to my dad, I can't find an event that I wouldn't be last in.
Right, right.
You know, I
well,
hate
you
the
would have
mile
gotten the
when you're
biggest
still on your...
crowd response because you know, when we have those races out there, and it seems like the last couple runners seem to get the biggest cheer.
They do, and
it's fantastic. So.
I remember one of my daughters likes to run the 800, and every now and then, you know, she's figured it out now how to kind of pace herself and stuff. But in the early times, you know, she'd kind of just lag behind the pace. Just, I'm out for a Sunday jog, you know, and you know, about on the far turn of the second lap, the final lap,
right.
You know, people start cheering because she's last or next to last, and all of a sudden here comes this burst of energy. I'm going, where was that in the first two laps?
Right, right.
You know,
exactly.
What are you saving it for?
But it's, you know, I think that's the fun of this.
Yeah.
You kind of develop different
skills. Yeah.
And the coaching comes along and helps you with some of those things.
Yeah.
And we, the track probably has, I'm guessing we have between 400 and 600 students that participate.
Yeah.
Given the number of schools. And we have five gentlemen help me run this. But it's a collaborative effort because all of the schools help us. You know, either they're running one of the high jump, you know, the pit or the long jump pit. And they're the ones – and we have timers that volunteer from each of the schools. And it's not until we get to the championships of the JV and the varsity that we have a a company that comes in and does it for mm-hmm. us, which is great because some of those practice meets can get pretty long trying to get everything done.
Indeed they can.
But it still is, you know, a really fun experience for everybody. And it's been great. I couldn't imagine not doing this. And even Jill and I talk about this. We could keep doing this for years, you know, even as we get older and older and older. Yeah. It's like, okay, because we get a lot of joy out of just seeing.
You know, the thing is, it always seems strange to me. And I sit sometimes watching track meets with my kids or my wife, and I say, you know, like there's this kid, he's at Davis High School now. Uh-huh. 18 2.5 pole vaulter.
Wow.
That's world class.
Fantastic. You know? Right.
State record.
Yeah.
And you look at him and you go, and here's a kid who can't do 10 feet.
Right.
And they don't look any, it's not like you said, well, he's obviously,
yeah,
look at whatever, his body, sure. his shoulder, whatever. And you go, what is it? What's the difference?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing you see the kids that are running the mile.
Right.
You'll see some kids that are obviously faster, obviously, but you see this whole pack of them and you go, what? They all look alike to me.
Right. Absolutely.
What's separating them?
You know what? That's a good question. Because we had the boys' volleyball championships on Saturday.
Yeah.
Holy Family won, and one of their better players, who's kind of tall and lanky, I would say, wonderful young man. So he comes in on Saturday or Sunday and doing the track meet, and he wins the shot put event.
That's unusual.
And I'm kind of looking at him going, you know, normally you see a little bit of a huskier young man, and nothing against size or whatever, but it just was, you know, and he just had that physical ability to translate the skill of throwing the shot put with his body type to.
That's amazing.
He may never throw the shot put again once he gets to high school, but at this particular point, and he was fantastic on the volleyball court and just really helped power his, you know, along with other players, his team to a championship. And
you know, I think with in your line of work, the one thing that's hard is kids develop so differently at these ages.
Absolutely.
I remember starting high school and I was 5'2", you know, and I'd played basketball in junior high and thought I was pretty good. And I was about the same. And all my friends shot up a year before I did. And you know, and you look at the cut list and you didn't make it, you know, and you go, coach, last year I was pretty good. You know, and but you're a shrimp now, you know, and it's just it. And it's not just height and weight, it's skill. Sometimes
Absolutely.
A kid that strikes out every time as an 8-year-old is mm-hmm. suddenly a great hitter at 10, but it's getting them so they're not too discouraged
Absolutely.
From
right.
their early failures.
Right. I think that positivity of the experience really translates. And I know, I growing up, same type of thing, I wasn't very successful at baseball early, but eventually I think my body caught up and I was started to play a little bit better. I you know, over the years, I've seen some fantastic athletes play in the PAL. And sometimes that doesn't translate then even to the high school level.
Yeah.
Where, as you say, other students pass them by, height, weight, all the different body types.
Right.
And we see that in the girls' sports. We see that it's across the board. But ultimately, what I like to see is when students who maybe are kind of enjoying themselves when they're in junior high and the elementary age and, you know, enjoying sports, it's not as serious for them.
Right.
But they stay with it.
Yeah.
And then they develop and they continue to do things. And that's – we see so many students leave sports early because of various things. And I think the pressure to perform, the competitiveness, you know, I've got to do so well. And I think our approach is different in that we want the competitiveness, but we also want the camaraderie and the sportsmanship and, you know, continue to develop. I look at golf as that's a lifelong sport.
Exactly.
And we have 230 students who are going to be
that's
playing in a
stuff.
Golf tournament.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, wow, this is great. And they can translate that into a lifelong skill, if they choose to. But it doesn't matter whether you shoot, you know, 33 and win the championship or you shoot 63 and are part of your team. You're still going to have that experience. And And the way the coach approaches it,
yeah,
the way the parents approach it is vital, because you don't want them to be discouraged.
Absolutely.
Just keep going and something good will happen.
You know? That 33 on one hole?
No, we only allow double par. So the most they can get is a 10. But no, it, you know, we've had some fantastic golfers. But again, how does that translate when you get into a bigger course and, you know, you start playing against bigger kids and such? We look at the PL as just a wonderful feeder for the students to develop themselves.
Yeah.
Where they go with it, if they can go with it, that's up to them. But it's, again, part of that whole education that we provide to the students in our Catholic schools and the member schools. That, you know, it's a valuable piece, but it doesn't take precedent over anything else.
Sure.
They're all equally important. The religion, the education, their athleticism or physicality, those are all part of developing a whole person. And we just feel like we're a small slice of that pie, but it's been fun. So
it's great stuff. They're lucky to have you, I'll tell you. And I'm guessing Kenny O'Brien maybe went through the PAL.
I think so, yes.
He went to Jesuit.
It's interesting. I'm kind of, when I started here at St. James in, 84, I came in from St. Mary's College, so my affinity was with the Christian Brothers,
obviously.
And then I got here and I found out all about the, you know, the Holy Bowl and the rivalry, and you know, Bishop Minogue and St. Francis and Loretto, and you know, and it's been a great experience, and this is a great town for that local aspect of.
Well, I look at Dan Carmazzi, you know, played at Davis, UC Davis, but. You know, went to Christian Brothers,
right?
Coached a Jesuit for years, then coached Christian
back,
Brothers.
Yes, he's a wonderful man. I think he's the world of him. You know, he helped me start at Jesuit. I was coaching freshman football when I walked in there with 108 guys and three coaches. So it was quite an experience. I had all the support in the world from Dan, and just a wonderful
he's
man.
A great guy. Yeah. I remember asking him one day when he went back to Christian Brothers. I said, "Does your car get confused where it's supposed to go to work in the morning?"
I bet he had a good answer for that
one. Oh, he did. But there have been a lot of people like that come through the PAL and then come through the high schools.
Right.
And you know, we had Sister Eileen from Cristo Rey on retiring as president, and I said, I remember. The very first year you guys were open, you had a soccer championship banner in your gym. You know?
Right.
You know?
You got to be proud about that.
Oh,
that's
absolutely
great. That's fantastic. And their new facility that they're going to have over there, that's going to be really nice.
Yeah, it's going to be nice.
Look forward to seeing some of the new campus.
She said they were putting in a soccer field.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Or a soccer stadium.
That's their legacy over there. Then that's going to be great. I just feel blessed to be part of the diocese here. I think it's been fantastic. And I grew up in San Francisco, and I loved that experience. I've always been involved with Catholic education through my whole life. I've never been away from it, and it just has brought a lot of good things to me and to my experience. So.
And then, of course, that one Catholic school from the Bay Area, De La Salle, comes up here.
They're at a different level when they come to football there.
Oh, my goodness.
A lot of good friends that went to school there. So.
But, you know, it's interesting. I got to interview Bob Lavister one time. And it's the same things you're saying.
Right.
You know, just remarkable stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I to be compared with him favorably is great. That's a compliment for me. I know Marlon Blanton, who was our coach, played for Bob.
Right.
And,
you
know, just I think the approach is important. It's not just the X's and O's. It's the approach you take with the players and, you know, setting standards that are achievable, holding the students accountable.
Yep.
Those are the things that really mean everything. I mean, championships come and go, but I think Bob's legacy, the lasting legacy, is all those students that he's influenced in their whole life, not just the life of football.
Yeah, and you know, they've had some 5-star guys, some guys that go on to the NFL, some guys that get D1 scholarships, but like you say, even at a program like that, the numbers aren't there.
Right.
Not every kid's going to get a college scholarship,
sure.
But what did they do with their lives? Where did
right.
they go afterwards?
Absolutely.
And that's where the real proof is, and it's pretty pretty compelling.
Pretty amazing. I know Aaron Taylor was at Notre Dame last year presenting right. to us, and you know his impact was phenomenal. And he was telling us his upbringing and how he lucked into De La Salle and how it changed his life.
Yeah.
And that's not rare. That is something that Bob, I think, takes to his legacy as, you know, yep. there are so many guys that he's influenced in such a positive way.
Yeah.
And I think Jill and I and Dave, we're not at that level, but I think we have the legacy of trying to provide a program that the children can have a good time and enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been, like I said, it's a great ride, and it's not over yet. So I'm looking forward to the next, I don't know if it's 30 years, but I'll keep going as long as I can.
That's what I keep telling people. I'm sticking with 30.
Yeah, okay. we'll see. Sounds good. I'd like to push a little bit longer. We'll see how long I can last. So how long let me last, let's put it that way.
Exactly. Jerry, a pleasure. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you, Bob.
We're sure lucky to have you.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. You can drop by and shop at their thrift store, 2275 Watt Avenue. It's open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, furniture, appliances, clothing, books, and everyday household items. You can give them a call, 916-972-1212. We'd also like to thank the kind and dedicated folks at Associated Sound for all their help in keeping all our equipment running with their excellent sound assistant and technical expertise. When it comes to sound, Associated Sound is the only name you need to know. Give them a call. They're at 916-649-8040 or go online at associatedsound.com. Well, located in Citrus Heights, Christ the King has served Northern California in the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years. Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King as the jewel of the diocese, a wonderful retreat center. They have parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. You can give them a call, 916-725-4720. That's 916-725-4720. Or visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sheriff. I appreciate that. We appreciate having Jim McCormick join us, president of the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra. I'm going to talk about praise and jubilation.
Hey, Bob, I can't think of a better way to start a certain day than to be on the show with you.
Oh, thank you. I feel the same way.
So much, yeah.
I like that. I feel like a preacher. Praise and jubilation.
Well, you know, the idea of joy and thanksgiving, the event that Bob and I will be talking about is a final season concert of the Sacramento Choral Society, but it's an amazing partnership with the Sacramento State University.
Mm-hmm.
Three choirs from Sacramento State will join our large chorus and our professional orchestra, along with three professional soloists and the children's chorus.
Wow.
So we'll have a team of 305 people on stage at the community center.
There's not going to be any room for people to watch it.
Well, Cecil B. DeMille has been getting a little nervous, you know. Anyway, folks, it's this Saturday, the 12th of May, at the Community Center Theater at 1301 L Street. And it promises to be an uplifting experience because Don Kendrick is retiring from Sacramento State.
As the right, Don Kendrick.
the Donald, the other one. He's retiring from Sacramento State after being the director of choral activities there for 33 years.
Unreal.
So it's been a wonderful ride. He's enjoyed it. And his final gift for his students in three different choirs is to bring them downtown to celebrate with a professional orchestra. And the repertoire has the theme of thanksgiving and joy. So that's why it is praise and jubilation.
So was this particular concert something he got really, I mean, he's involved in everything, but got really involved in what we're going to do?
He planned it more than a year ago, exactly, knowing that he was retiring. And he thought, well, then let's do something upbeat, joyful, that offers hope mm-hmm. and also expresses his own thanksgiving mm-hmm. for 33 great years at Sacramento State. And you know, the one work is a Te Deum by Dvorak, the Hungarian composer, written in 1892. Dvorak came to the New World to be in New York for a while, and he gave thanks for that event by writing a Te Deum. Mm-hmm. Throughout history, Te Deums, they're basically an extended hymn of thanks. And throughout history, they've been composed by other great composers. And he thought this would be a great sort of musical fare to feature on the mm-hmm. first half. We'll pair that with Respighi, talking early 20th century Italian composer, Ancient Airs and Dances. And that's just for the orchestra. And that work is in four movements, and it shows the respect that we have in classical music for the past. Mm-hmm. So we'll actually have a work from the late 19th century, a work from the early 20th century, and then a work that is probably almost still wet on the page, a West Coast premiere by a young American composer, Dan Forrest. Mm. And his work is Jubilate Deo, Shout with Joy to God. He sets this Psalm 100 in seven different languages, and he incorporates the musical cultural influences into each movement. So right away, you see the respect he has for language. And it's highly rhythmical, and it brings in such amazing instruments as the Chinese two-stringed fiddle, the Eru. We'll even have a guitar in there, 52-member orchestra. And so it's
a two-string fiddle? Are the other strings broken?
No. You'll see David Ahn. He is a professional Eru player. And
how do you spell it? A-R-U?
E-H-R-U.
E-H-R-U.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like Canadian. A-E-H-R-U.
Like Nehru.
Exactly. That's right. Exactly. So if you can imagine the energy on stage with the children's chorus also performing. Three outstanding soloists that include Rachel Songer, mm-hmm. who's been a cantor at the cathedral for some years.
Fabulous voice.
Yeah, great. And Anne-Marie Endres, a voice teacher here in town. And one of Don Kendrick's former graduate students, Sean Spies, who was a high school mm-hmm. teacher. Sean came to the Baltics last summer as one of our baritone soloists. So it's really it really draws everything that Don does in this community for the church, community, and state on one stage.
And Don, of course, is a choir director as well.
That's right. And what's wonderful is we know that we'll have some tickets available at the door at the Community Center Theater. The concert's at 8 o'clock, and there is a pre-concert talk at 7 p.m.
And who will be delivering that talk?
I think his name is Dr. James P. McCormick.
Wow.
But what we'll do is try to outline what to listen for at the concert itself. The doors will open at 6:30, the pre-concert talk's at 7. And then at the end of the evening, 10 o'clock or so, we have a fun, short, brief post-concert reception in the lobby. And it's to greet the artists, but also to wish Don well and thank him, perhaps some photos. And then throughout the evening, because we have seven different languages up on the screen that's very discreet above the stage, we'll have projected supertitle translations. Mm-hmm. And they add a lot to the evening. So we're thrilled about that.
Very good. You bring a cut or two with you?
Yes. I thought we'd start off with the first movement sung in Latin. We love singing in Latin. Jubilate Deo, O be joyful in the Lord, all ye lands. The energy reminds you of Carmina Burana. Jubilate Deo, first movement of Dan Forrest, Jubilate Deo.
Welcome back. Jim McCormick joins us from the Sacramento Choral Society. And Don's retiring. Don Kendrick is retiring.
From Sacramento State.
But only from Sacramento State.
Yes, he's doing what we call, Bob, retirement on the installment plan.
On the installment plan, because he wears so many hats.
Yeah, we are both thrilled and relieved that he will, continue to live in the community in Fair Oaks, right. California, and that he will continue with the Sacramento Choral Society that he founded 22 years ago. And we're really delighted that he will also continue with Schola Cantorum at Sacred Heart Church and the men's chorus that he has there, Vox Nova. 26 years ago, he founded those. So Don will continue to wear some hats. I know he wants to spend some time writing music. Rumor has it that he wants to go to cooking school. Hmm. So he will be chef de cuisine, chef de chorale, chef de cuisine. So he will not be at a loss for things to do. He doesn't refer to it as retirement. You probably know we love the phrase rechanneling your energies.
Sure, sure.
So, but it would be great to have the students with us. It's really it's a bittersweet occasion.
My kids have told me they wished I was going to cooking school.
I bet your wife does too. Well, it really is an art form.
I can light the briquettes. You know, that's about it.
Load the dishwasher.
Yeah.
But no, it's been a really good ride. Don has taken these students to Europe. They've been to Montreal and Ottawa, Canada, Vancouver, Victoria. Lots of CDs. And sort of a good role model for how to get projects done. You know, I know that his kindness and compassion will remain in the memories of these students for a long time.
That's great. I would love to have been one of the students who got to go to Victoria.
I think it is
one of the most beautiful
Western Canada.
Cities,
yeah. Don't get me going on that.
I don't.
I know. Well, you know, if people want tickets for this event at the Community Center box office, it's 916-808-5181. Again, there will be tickets at the door, and the good news is students can get rush seats for $13.
Wow.
So these are $53 seats for $13. So starting at 6:30 p.m. on May 12th,
that's
students can enjoy rush seats.
You have another cut for us?
Yes. I thought we'd move on to China. This is the third movement, and the third movement of the Psalm 100 deals with the sheep of his pasture. And so he sort of goes into a little bit of Psalm 23, the whole idea of the shepherd and the sheep. And this work is sung in Mandarin, and we've had a Mandarin coach who's been very helpful. And so it is he that has made us and not we ourselves, the sheep of his pasture, third movement of Dan Forrest, Jubilate Deo.
Languages will be Zulu?
Yes, you know.
Very interesting.
It's we don't know how many people will be in the audience who speak Zulu, but we're honoring that language.
In this area, there may well be some.
Yeah.
We are very multicultural.
And we've been really careful on the supertitle translations because it's not your average connections on the phonetics. But yeah, this movement in Zulu is... Well, all I can say, Bob, is I'm glad that we have liability insurance at the Community Center Theater because you can't help but want to get up and dance in the aisles. I mean it. But there's steps there, ladies and gentlemen.
There are,
and it's sort of dark. So as much as you want to get up and really do the Watusi, we encourage
careful on the balconies.
But it is just the word jubilant. It starts off, it's a lot of sort of almost shouting, but you can't help. I mean, talk about endorphins being released when this movement comes up. And so for this entire piece, there's seven movements. Normally, we encourage people not to applaud. But you know what? You can't sit on your hands for seven movements.
Yeah.
So in the second half of the concert, we're encouraging people to applaud at the end of each movement. And it will honor the language they just heard and the culture that goes with it. I do have one caveat. That when you applaud, could you wait 1 second after the piece, that movement's over, because we're recording the concert, and we'd love to have a clean cut without driving the poor recording engineer crazy,
you know?
But we do encourage applause on the second half of the concert. And this Zulu tune is dealing with, shout with triumph to the Lord, all the earth. Serve the Lord with joy. Come before his presence with singing. Check out the energy in this piece.
Oh,
We're with James McCormick, president of the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra. We're talking about a wonderful concert coming up this Saturday, May the 12th, 8 o'clock, with a pre-concert talk at 7 o'clock, all at Sacramento Community Center Theater. 916-808-5181 is the phone. Tell us a little bit about Sacramento Children's Chorus.
It's been founded, well, the original founding was going on 26 years ago. Lynn Stevens was a graduate student at Sacramento mm-hmm. State, and she and Don got together and decided, let's do something for a master's degree that would serve the community long term. So, boy, 26 years ago, Lynn and Don established the Sacramento Children's Chorus. They've gone on to form multiple choirs under that umbrella. They've toured the world. It's just amazing. They have great sound. They're young professionals.
What age are we talking about?
They're roughly 8 to some. There's some older students in there, 8 to about 17 or 18. Mm-hmm. They've done a really good job of having young people meet other young people who love that art form, and they have formed friendships for life. I know they just had a concert yesterday, and they honored about 8 of them who are graduating and heading mm-hmm. on to university. And so it's been really great. And what's wonderful is often these young students, when they graduate from college and enter the workforce, they remember the Choral Society, mm-hmm. and they audition for us.
Wow.
So we have current members who were members of the Children's Chorus. So it's really good for them to see their young colleagues on stage with us.
Boy, that's great stuff. So the Rachel Songer, I've heard her sing,
yeah,
and perform.
Heavenly.
It's tell us about of all of them, Anne-Marie Endress and Sean Spies.
Anne-Marie teaches voice locally. Mm-hmm. She's performed with us a couple of times on our Stained Glass concert. Beautiful, rich, lyrical voice. And Sean Spies is a powerful baritone and a dynamic high school teacher. Yeah, he's one of these teachers that's organized trips to Carnegie Hall for his mm-hmm. students. He's traveled with us to the Baltics. And Rachel, of course, has been in theater, musical theater, a lot in Sacramento. And I know she served the cathedral as a cantor for some years. So we're glad to have professional local talent with us on stage. We're bringing good energy to the downtown.
Did the Choral Society and Orchestra, has it changed from the either the mission or just sort of the anticipation? You found something and you have an idea, and then it becomes something else.
I think, you know, Bob, one of the reasons that I consider the organization successful is because we never strayed from our mission. Our mission was to promote the education, performance, and appreciation of great classical music. Now, the odd time we've done a Broadway program, and we've done it well, but like, the entire repertoire on this concert is all classical music. Mm-hmm. And I think by not trying to be all things to all people and keeping your hand on the plow and identifying beautiful classical music that needs to be heard in this community, by the way. I'm afraid that a lot of organizations, they feel that you have to entertain the troops, entertain the masses. We haven't certainly taken that approach. You know, we encourage people to put their cell phones away and honor the beauty of the music at hand and the composer's intentions. So, in that respect, we might be considered a dinosaur, but it's working. This is year 22 we're finishing, and we're operating in the black. Big Day of Giving was very kind to us. I'm really pleased. We were the number one arts group on Big Day of Giving.
Oh, wow.
That was a real shot in the arm. Yeah, $70,000.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I want to thank our listeners, our donors. But we make it happen, and we plan carefully. And Kendrick has a good ear for programming. Mm-hmm. He puts a lot of thought into linking themes.
Mm-hmm.
And then lots of ongoing auditions all year long, new energy. And then tonight all the forces will gather at Sac State for our final rehearsal before we go downtown to meet our orchestra Friday evening. So in the recital hall, we'll have pretty well 260 singers.
Wow.
We couldn't do it in the choral room because the fire marshal would get pretty nervous.
Yeah.
So we'll be in the recital hall, and we'll have Ryan Enright, our amazing accompanist, on stage. And then also tonight, we unveil our brand new 2019 international tour. Mm. We'll unveil to our singers where we're heading. So it's exciting.
Very good. You want to take us out? Give us the last cut here. Jim, always a pleasure.
Bob, thank you so much. This is a trip to Latin America. The work is in Spanish. Bless His Holy Name. It's a Latin American setting to a folk song style melody, blending traditional folk instrumental sounds with polyphonic textures from the classical choral tradition. Bless His Holy Name in Spanish, Jubilate Deo by Dan Forrest.
Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the good folks at the Catholic Store located at 1928 Broadway in downtown Sacramento. It has articles for baptism, First Communion, confirmation, ordinations, weddings, and much, much more, plus Bibles, books, holy cards, and a variety of gifts. Give them a call, 916-457-1970, or visit them at 1928 Broadway right here in Sacramento. We're also brought to you by a generous grant from the Knights of Columbus Todd Cabral Agency, which provides guaranteed wealth creation for your family and your passion while maintaining the highest ethical standards in the industry. The Knights of Columbus Insurance, keeping Father McGivney's promise alive by providing peace of mind to Catholic families since 1882. To find an agent in your area, call our good friend Todd Cabral. Todd is at 916-997-9999. Bishop Sauer is also pleased to have underwriting support from Catherine Fisher, LCSW, providing therapy and mental health services from a Catholic perspective. Catherine knows that our Catholic faith is interwoven into every aspect of our lives and relationships. She offers counseling for individuals, couples, and families. You can call her at 916-214-4623 or go to C. Fisher, LCSW, at CATHIMail.com.
Hello, this is John Watkins, Director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. You are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love, and you can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation by calling 916-851-2700. Fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts is for all of us. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. Give them a call. They're at 916-338-7272 or drop on and visit them, 6916-6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Well, if you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to where you want to go. Details are available at Crumley & Associates. They're at 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks, or give them a call at 916-638-4600. We thank them for their longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. Underwriting is also provided to the Bishop's Hour by Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, a ministry of the Diocese of Sacramento. As a church-owned nonprofit founded in faith, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services is dedicated to providing education, support, and resources during life's most difficult moments. They will make every effort to enable you to realize your final wishes while empowering families to make completely informed decisions. You can give them a call, 855-525-2285. 1-800-795-8585. We thank all the wonderful underwriters for the Bishop's Hour, and we hope you will support those who support us. Thanks for listening, everybody. God bless. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sure by now, God, you would have reached down and wiped our tears away, stepped in and saved the day. But once again, I say amen, and it's still raining. But as the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through the rain. God who gives and takes away.